Marhaba, and welcome to the Matrix Green Pill, where real people connect.
Hello and welcome back to the Matrix Green Pill podcast. I'm Hilmarie Hutchison, and today I am so excited to introduce Aziz Moussa, founder and CEO of Kush Digital. From surviving a war to becoming the UK's youngest public company CEO, Aziz has had an extraordinary journey. His business endeavors have reached across continents, leaving a profound mark on the digital landscape within emerging markets. Fueled by a dedication to fostering resilience in the business realm and a skill for guiding through challenging circumstances, he truly personifies the essence of a transformative leader. Aziz, welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Welcome. Thanks very much, Hilmarie. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today. Before we get into the meat of it, could you start off by telling our listeners about yourself, your background?
I was born in the UK. I spent most of my first 20-odd years in a small, sleepy village in Lancashire in the north of England. And my background is business. That's all I studied. I had my first business when I was 11 years old, nearly got me expelled from school, but it wasn't anything illegal. I was just selling sweets, but the school didn't like it. You know, the businesses that were thriving were all digital businesses, so I found myself in the digital world. So in the UK, I worked at lastminute.com. In Scandinavia, that was called Restfaber. For various companies like Moonpig.com and Photobox and other companies. And I spent a lot of my time in business traveling. I lived in Dubai before Dubai became Dubai, 2003, 2004. Went through that kind of journey and became the CEO of a publicly listed company in the UK called Blackbird PLC. From there, I moved to Sudan in Africa to start a social enterprise. So in like a 30-second nutshell, that's kind of my career.
Fantastic. So growing up in the UK, what was the dream for you?
To play for Liverpool Football Club, like every normal human being in the UK. That was, of course, my dream. But I just didn't happen to be any good at football, as it happens. If I'm really honest, when I was younger, I loved businesses. I loved seeing how businesses were created and evolved from a young age. You know, we were always taught that if you want to stand on your own two feet, get a job. My dad would always give us an allowance, but that allowance was basically the same as any income that we made. So if we went and worked, for example, I worked at a Chinese restaurant and I made 30 British pounds, reasonable amount of money for a 15-year-old kid or a 14-year-old kid at the time. My dad would also give me 30 pounds. So he'd like double any income that we made. He was a doctor in the NHS, and that was always part of our growing up, you know, how we viewed the world. And I loved it. I used to do really random things. I think for a child, they're really random. I used to connect local businesses and say, if you do some like cross-promotional advertising, then you'll both benefit. I did that with the Chinese restaurant. I did it with various little businesses in our town. So I'd always wanted to be in business. I'd always wanted to be a businessman, much to my father and my uncle's dismay, because they're all professors and doctors. I never had an inkling toward that. I really enjoyed the cut and thrust of business. And I think that was the dream. And so to a very large extent, I'm kind of living what I always wanted to do.
I don't think there's too many people that can say that they're living the dream that they had for themselves. And as you say, at 11 years old, starting your first business, you set yourself on that path from a very early age. I also love the fact that your father matched your income with your allowance. I think that was a very smart to motivate you. So it wasn't just giving you money. You work for some money and then I'll match it. I think that was a very clever way, a very good approach you had. Let's talk about the social enterprise in Sudan. What was that about? What got you to start that?
I left the UK in 2017 and I'd been the CEO of a public company for some time. I really felt entirely unfulfilled. I really felt like I wasn't doing anything of value in the world. I'm a person of religion. I believe in God. I believe in like the afterlife. And I kind of felt like, okay, so if I died today, what did I leave behind? And I didn't really feel like I'd done anything of any magnitude, of any value to the world and to the people around it. And so my wife and I sat down and we said, okay, if I'm going to leave this company, I'm not going to go to another job. I'm not going to go to another company. What should we do? And we're originally from the Sudan in Africa. We decided, okay, let's go there. You know, they don't have any digital economy. Let's see if we can help build a digital economy. The plan was to go there to start a social enterprise called Sudan Digital and really to train youth in digital marketing. I had no ambition for growth or clients or any of those things. That really wasn't the objective. There was a huge appetite, this kind of knowledge. And so we were training and then creating over the years, like really exceptional digital marketers. And through the process of creating those great digital marketers, we started getting clients. not in Sudan, outside of Sudan, mostly in Saudi and in the UAE. And as the clients grew, we grew. And suddenly, a few years later, we found ourselves as the biggest digital marketing agency in the region, with like clients in Japan and in Australia and in the US and everywhere else. And that was absolutely not the plan. The plan was 100% to build a digital capabilities within Sudan. And through that process, I've been fortunate enough to train more than 4,000 people in the fundamentals of digital marketing. You know, hundreds of startups were created. And I really feel like what we did was good work. And what I learned probably in business through that process is that the desired outcome will generally come if you do the right thing. That's really how I've lived my life since. You just do the right thing, and then the right thing will happen, will come as a result of that. It was a great journey, and we're still on that journey. It's something we've loved doing, and we keep doing it.
What a remarkable accomplishment. As you say, doing the right thing, and also providing something of real value. There was obviously a need, there was a gap that you were able to fill that led to the success that you had. What were some of the challenges, though, that you faced trying to set up or working in East Africa?
Lots of things that you can't even really imagine. Coming from the Western world, I just talk about infrastructural things. Randomly, the internet would cut, or the electricity would cut, or the water would cut. Roads were difficult. If it rains in the rainy season, and then employees can't make it to the office because the roads are closed. I mean, lots of just infrastructural things. They were all things that you can kind of plan for and mitigate to some extent. So pretty early, we weren't going to have a digital marketing agency unless we had stable internet. And so we had like 5 different providers of internet to tide us over to make sure that if there were any outages, we always had backups. When it comes to electricity, we installed solar panels, and that got us through any electricity challenges. So all of those things were mitigatable, if you like. We could find solutions to them. The things that I think were the most surprising and the most challenging were the cultural differences. We focused on hiring exclusively Sudanese graduates. Something north of 60% of graduates in Sudan don't find work in the first 2 years of graduation. So we wanted to try and help solve that problem at the same time. And what we found is just sort of cultural differences that I'd never come across before. For example, would be normal for a father to come with his daughter to an interview and insist on sitting in on the interview. And I think the first couple of times that happened, I was like, what are we doing? It's just a cultural difference. It's a cultural nuance that we kind of had to get used to. So there were lots of challenges. Those challenges were my challenges, not Sudan's challenges, right? So they were things for me to solve, not for Sudan to solve. There aren't really any challenges that can happen in life that you can't overcome, as long as you've got a mindset that everything's possible.
I love that approach, that you had to adapt to the region that you had moved to rather than expect the country to change to accommodate the way that you were used to things being done. Absolutely fantastic. Can you share maybe a story or an experience that highlights the resilience required to succeed in the competitive world of digital marketing?
I can share lots. I don't think resilience is exclusive to digital marketing. Resilience is just a fundamental requirement of any entrepreneur, regardless of industry. You can be the owner of a gym, or you can be a digital marketing owner. You could be anything. Resilience is just a base level requirement. You can't even get into the game without that. I'll give you a story, I guess. So as many of your listeners will know, 15th of April, a war broke out in Sudan. That war broke out right in front of our office. And I literally mean in front of our office, like 50 meters away from where we were, and we could see the planes coming down. And it was very intense, I'll say. Living in Sudan, you kind of get used to expecting the unexpected. So we had contingency plans for lots of scenarios, including this scenario. And that kind of helps with resilience, because when you have the confidence that you have a plan in place if something goes wrong, it kind of allows you to just execute automatically when those things happen. Nothing really prepares you for war. Nothing prepares you for the sights and the smells and the sounds. Nothing really prepares you for that, except for having gone through challenges in life beforehand and being able to stay super calm and focused in that moment. The net result of the war was that, you know, a week after the war had begun, we evacuated to Aswan in Egypt, where I am now. We evacuated much of our team there too. By the time we were all set up in Aswan in Egypt, the majority of our clients had absolutely no idea that we had left the war. There are lots of nuances within that, how we communicate with clients, what is automated, what do we use Zapier for in order to make sure that things are moving, how are things scheduled? There are lots of things that we had pre-planned for. If we had to go off the grid for a week, people wouldn't necessarily notice. And that's exactly what happened. being a business owner of any kind in any industry in any country, resilience is just a core facet of everything that you do. You've got little challenges like making payroll. I mean, that's not a little challenge. It's the main challenge that most businesses face. How do you make payroll at the end of every month? And when you build up that kind of resilience muscle, you kind of are able to navigate almost any challenge. I always think back to one of my mentors who said that you never really fail until you stop trying. That's kind of how I always saw business. You never really fail until the moment that you say, ah, enough's enough. Because when you say enough's enough, then really you've given up. And if you've given up, then you've failed. But for as long as you can stay calm and just do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and you can keep going and survive through any challenge, then A, you're building your resistance muscles, and B, you're continuing to build resistance within your organization.
What an experience to face a war so close to you. I love that you also mentioned that you had a plan in place to deal with issues before they arise so that it makes it easier to navigate the challenges and to navigate emergencies like this. How long did it take you to make that transition from moving from Sudan, your whole operation, over to Egypt?
7 days. So from the day the war started until we were set up in Aswan was 7 days. 5 of those days were traveling. By the time we got to Aswan, listen, we're digital marketers. All we really need are our laptops and the decent internet connection. And everything is in the cloud. But that was by design. By design, we knew that these things could happen in Sudan. It didn't necessarily have to be a war. Before that, there was a coup. There were protests. These things can happen in Sudan. The entire organization was built around geographic resilience. As long as we have a decent internet connection and some electricity, we could work in the middle of the desert. Doesn't make a difference to us. Because we had done all of that prep work, we had basically built the organization around that geographic resilience. By the time we arrived in Aswan in Egypt, our only issue was, all right, can we get an office? And we found an office straight away and we moved in. Honestly, it was quite fun. The first few weeks, we were sat on beanbags that we just bought from the local shop, and we had the internet up and running immediately. The great thing in Egypt is that the infrastructure is really strong. The telco companies work really quickly, so you can call for a network and they're available sort of within a few hours. You'll have a decent internet connection. But yeah, for the first few weeks, we were sat on beanbags and drinking coffee from the local coffee shop and all of that. And then, like all businesses, now we've got our desks and our offices and the mirrors and the flowers and the plants and all of that. But it took a week because we had pre-prepared so much of our business's infrastructure so that we could be geographically resilient.
That's fantastic. I guess COVID did not have much impact on you because you were already able to work remotely if you needed to.
COVID was, sadly to say, the best thing that happened to our business. That when COVID occurred, the world realized how digital marketing is literally transformative, and companies that had never even considered digital marketing were forced to consider digital marketing. We got more inbound business during COVID than at any other time in our history or since, frankly. COVID was great for us. In Sudan, the lockdowns weren't as severe as other parts of the world. It was only actually a few weeks of lockdown. Then everyone just came back and lived their life. I mean, COVID was about perspective. One of my brothers lived in the UK. COVID was a massive disaster for them. In Sudan, COVID was a cold. Ultimately, disasters were happening every day. You know, we went 6 months without any petrol available for cars. COVID was just a thing that happened, and it wasn't big of a deal compared to all of the other things. From a perspective standpoint, it was easier to deal with, I think, in Sudan.
Your point of view that you said it's a perspective. So it didn't have the same impact on everybody. It all depended on where you were at the time. Again, because you had set up your business in Sudan, in fact, was a good thing for your business, if we can look at it from that side of things. Let's change direction and talk about digital marketing. How do you stay ahead of the curve in an industry that is constantly evolving? And what advice would you give to aspiring digital marketers?
What advice would I give to aspiring digital marketers? I guess the first thing is start digital marketing 10 years ago. That would have been helpful. This is probably the most interesting time in digital marketing in my entire career. How do you stay ahead of the curve? Let's start there, because actually it's almost impossible to do that now. There are new tools every day. I mean, when I started in digital marketing, some of your listeners will be old enough to remember something called the Big Daddy update, which was a massive Google update in 2005, which affected loads of businesses, including the businesses I worked at the time. When you live through those kinds of seismic shifts in the digital marketing landscape, things become easier. You understand that actually this is an evolving landscape and you have to kind of move with that landscape. And the algorithms have trained us to do that. For really since 2005 until 2021, 2022, we were always in that cycle of evolving with the algorithms and the tools. So the algorithms evolved, we evolved. The algorithms evolved, we evolved. A new tool comes in, we evolve with that. And they're all based around very similar paradigms. And then AI. It is now essentially impossible to stay ahead of the curve, because the curve is moving so fast. Any digital market, in fact, any business, regardless of what industry they're in, that isn't incorporating artificial intelligence into the core of their operations will be obsolete in 5 years. It's that dramatic a shift. This is a bigger move in terms of impact to humanity than electricity. That's how seismic a shift that we're talking about. We're on the cutting edge of what AI will do, right? Digital marketers are always on the cutting edge of all new technologies, typically. So we're the first to see the impact. We adopted AI very, very early. Late 2021 is when we integrated our first AI tools. Now we have a whole suite of AI tools, and they change every day. Every week, we've got new tools that we're testing. Staying ahead of that curve is a real challenge. You have to build that capability into the organization. And actually, that's what we do. So we have three people in our company who's, I wouldn't say it's their full-time job, because it's not. They are responsible for testing new tech. Whenever a new tool comes out, we share it into a single group. One of them nominates, then they do an analysis, they test it, they buy it if they need to buy it, if it's behind a paywall. They test it, then they share the results, and we decide, okay, do we adopt this? Do we not adopt this? Or do we wait to see how it evolves? Honestly, that's the most effective way that we found to stay ahead of the tools and the technology. But our industry has a very limited lifespan. Within 8 to 10 years, the concept of a digital marketing agency won't even exist. AI will be that dominant in our industry that, and it will be so available, it will be so ubiquitous that literally anybody, the owner of a burger stand, could set up their own digital marketing agency through AI in 5 to 8 years. So we understand that. We know that there is a limited lifespan, and we're already planning how do we evolve beyond AI in the future.
That's really interesting. And I like your approach to that. You are trying out these various tools to see which ones are a good fit for your company that you can use. What would you say are the best AI tools that all companies should be using now?
I'm going to say at the heart of our tool set is ChatGPT, right? So you got GPT-3, but really the paid versions. And then more importantly, the team version of ChatGPT, because the team version allows you to retain privacy of information, right? So the information you enter the AI isn't used for the AI's learning set. So that's kind of really important for us and for our clients. And it allows you to create your own GPTs, so your own mini AIs for very specific tasks. So I would say that's probably at the heart of our tool set. We have tried lots of variances of that. So we tried Bard and we tried other ones. I'd say ChatGPT is right in the center. We use another tool called Munch. You can find it, I think it's getmunch.com, which is kind of cool. So when we do our own podcast, we just take that podcast recording, throw it into Munch. The AI transcribes it and then finds the TikTokable bits of content and cuts them so that you can instantly create reels and YouTube shorts and TikTok videos from a podcast. And we do that, and we offer that as a service as well to other podcasters. They're probably the core ones. I don't know, we use maybe 12 at the moment that are embedded in our daily operations, 12 different AI tools. And it changes so often. Munch is only 3 weeks into the company, and already there are two potential alternatives that the guys are investigating at the moment. It's difficult to say which are the most important. I would say that ChatGPT is the most important at the moment, just because it's so embedded in everything that we do.
The market moves so fast. As soon as you've got one thing going, the next thing is already there being introduced into the market. So interesting that you're already recognizing that with the way the landscape is evolving, that you're going to have to also adapt your business. You're able to give us a little idea of which way you're going, or is this all still secret?
Oh, I can absolutely. I'll tell you which way we're going, because most people don't believe me when I tell them that this is how I believe the world will evolve, the marketing world. I'm almost certain that it will. And it will evolve into your industry, into public relations, into face-to-face engagement, into events. As marketers, as digital marketers in particular, we are great overusing technology. That's like our thing. Do you remember the very first email account that you had? Do you remember it? Like the first work email account you ever got?
I can remember my very first account because I still have it.
So you remember in that early period, you'd get so excited when you got an email from anybody or even from a company, right?
Absolutely.
And now you get 100 emails a day, and most of them you've got filtered and they go into spam boxes and things like that. Because we as marketers, that's what we do. We find a new channel and we exhaust it to the point of people getting irritated with it. This is the natural thing, the natural evolution of AI. We will push it to such an extent. Let's talk about not too far into the distant future, 18 months into the future. 18 months into the future, the ad channels that we all use on a daily basis, Meta, Business Suite, you know, Google Ads, whatever it is, all of those ad channels will be AI driven. And what does that really mean? It means that today, Hilmary, when you open up your Instagram app and you're scrolling through the feed, you'll see ads that are targeted to someone who is like you. So someone who is within your age age range, living within a radius of where you live that has the behavioral traits of you, but not specifically you, just someone who is like you. In 18 months' time, we will be able to target you by name, specifically. We won't be doing it. It will all be AI. So in that world, initially, there'll be shock and there'll be privacy concerns. And like everything within digital marketing, we'll just become totally accustomed to it. And then we as digital marketers will overuse it and we'll push it to the extent where people will become entirely desensitized to entirely personalized marketing. That is an end game for digital marketers. Because if I can target you specifically as an individual by name, knowing everything I need to know about you, and you are still not engaging with that creative, that advert, whatever it is, that email, that message, that means my job is done because I can't get more accurate than that. The only way I can get more accurate is to meet you face to face, to have a face to face discussion. That's why your industry, events and public relations, will become the future digital marketing industry of the world, because people will recognize that digital marketing's value is limited and really human contact is more important than anything else. And I think that all digital marketing agencies in the next 5 to 8 years will fall into two buckets. The first bucket is that they will become events and PR agencies. And the second bucket is that they won't exist.
How fascinating. As you say, I think face-to-face human interaction, human contact is what is going to make the difference in the future. We've almost come full circle going through the whole digital path and back to human interaction is what's going to remain important going forward. Just want to come back to our discussion earlier where you mentioned about training more than 4,000 individuals in digital marketing. Is that still an ongoing process for you?
At that time, I was doing it in Sudan specifically with the aim of building like the Sudanese economy, the Sudanese digital economy. So I was doing it as a very deliberate exercise. You know, I had partnerships with universities and I did it entirely free of charge, right? So it was very important to me that nobody paid a penny. I had agreements with universities and training centers that I could use their facilities for free and they were all very generous, and with training academies that they would issue certificates. So it was a deliberate exercise that I went through. Now I'm in Egypt, I'm not doing it in that kind of deliberate form, but the ethos is still the same, in that part of the value of that process was finding potential talent. So I would do the training and then I would put them through sort of exams and I could see potential talent within the pool of students and then I'd encourage them to apply. That same training exists, but we just apply it here in Egypt, but not on a mass level. Whenever we're hiring new talent, we just put them through that same training and those same exercises and then select from the talent pool that exists. And the great thing about Aswan in Egypt, it's a very, very young city. There's a huge university here and we have access to a huge talent pool, actually, and the incredibly hard workers in Egypt, incredibly hard.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your story with us and your insights. Now we've come to the segment of our show where I'll ask you some rapid fire questions, our version of a game show. Are you ready?
I am ready.
You've lived in various countries, various continents. What is your favorite holiday destination?
Anywhere that there's no internet. Probably the Highlands of Scotland.
Oh, yes. Beautiful. What is your go-to comfort food?
Chocolate.
If you could invite one guest to dinner, who would it be?
I guess Jesus of Nazareth.
Oh, nice. What is one thing you'd do every day, no matter how busy you get?
Exercise.
Do you ever take time away from digital, from any electronics, put it that way?
Yes, I have to deliberately detox at least once every 3 months.
And how long do you do that for?
At least a day, but preferably 3 days.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for playing along. That was easy enough. Now, before we wrap up, we'd like to do our Green Pill moment. What was your Green Pill moment, the action or event that was the turning point for you or your career?
I think I've had a few Green Pill moments. Maybe before I say which one's the most significant, I'll say that they all share a very similar trait. They were all the worst moments. What I've realized about Green Pill moments is that they are the worst moments in history, but the best moments in time. And what I mean by that is that at moment, they are almost always a disaster or feel like a disaster. But with hindsight, when you look back in history, they're almost always the making of the next chapter of your life. I would probably say my biggest Green Pill moment was not the war. It was when I came back from an investor meeting whilst I was the CEO of a PLC and sat down with my wife and realized that what I was doing added no value to the world. And it was quite an epiphanic moment where I thought I was important because the societal structures I lived in gave me importance, gave me authority through structure. I actually wasn't doing anything of value to the world. That changed my entire direction in life.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that story with us, because I know that you mentioned earlier that that realization, that moment in time, is what then set you on the path to move to Sudan and create an impact on the world in a way that had more meaning in training people and then growing a business in the way that you have. Certainly a fantastic journey. Congratulations on all the success that you have had. We appreciate that you are here today telling us, or having shared the story with us today. Before we say goodbye, could you please tell our audience where they can find and follow you? And we'll also put this in the show notes.
I am easiest to find on LinkedIn, because that's the only channel that I actually engage in. On the other channels, I just consume. So LinkedIn, just search Aziz Musa, A-Z-I-Z-M-U-S-A. And then obviously on our website, so that's Kush Digital, C-U-S-H.digital.
Thank you for that. And I wish you all the very best, and Kush Digital all the very best. And I will certainly be following your journey as well.
Thank you very much. It's been a really great and enjoyable interview. Thank you, Hail Mary.
If you enjoy our conversations, please like and subscribe. See you next Wednesday.